This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on Ash Wednesday. And we will start with a review of what's going on Wall Street. It's been a rough couple of days as the markets have tumbled in response to the coronavirus, perhaps becoming a pandemic. And we'll talk about it with Andy Anderson, financial analyst, and Fred Dent, frequent contributors to this program, and we'll get their take. The early report today is more promising. The Dow is up just a bit, but we saw that happen yesterday, and then boom, it started tumbling again. We'll find out from them what they think is going to happen in the near term and the long term with the market, which has been up, up, and away for several years since George W. Bush left the White House. And time permitting, we'll look at what's going on in the presidential sweepstakes with the South Carolina primary this Saturday. This is Jim Inkster, pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana, and we start by talking about what's going on Wall Street, and now many Americans, of course, are affected by volatility in New York City. Many have money in 401ks, and this includes not only the very rich, but just average folks have difficulty when the market tumbles as it has the last few days. But as we've seen before, these things happen and the market comes back. It took, about 35 years for it to come back after the 1929 crash, but it came back mightily after the crash when George Bush was president, and under Barack Hussein Obama, it rose 148%. And under Donald John Trump, it's gone up over 35% in just over 3 years. But the last few days have been brutal. Today is going to be an interesting day. It started high. It's still up, but not as up as much as it was. And where is this going? And this is almost exclusively related not to anything happening to the economy per se, but how the economy will be affected by the coronavirus. And let's begin with you, Fred Dent. What's your take on where this is going and how this could roil the markets?
Well, I think royal is an overstatement, but I was shaving this morning and what popped in my mind is this is kind of like a bucket of thin glue, not super glue, but just thin glue that is easily solventable, and the only main solvent with that is time.
Andy, is it going to be a rough ride?
First of all, after 29, it took 20 years.
Well, I think it took 1964 to get back to where the Dow was.
Well, 1950.
Well, there's a difference in that scheme, and that is that you were also handsomely paid by dividends and bond yields at that time to compensate for that.
It took a while, but continue, please.
Well, I think it's important to understand that it's not the news that's important. It's how does the market react to the news. So we've got the defensive team on the field here. Our portfolio is currently 70% cash. We only have three investments, of which one is Tesla. We do own Tesla. We bought it last year.
Okay. Tesla's gone up, up, and away this year, and you've held on to it despite this.
Yeah, I'm watching it closely. They've got a big announcement coming in April, which is what they call the Battery and Powertrain Day. And we're convinced, and we're speculating, and make sure everybody understands the word speculation. Speculation means to, like speculare, mm-hmm. which is the Latin word, means to see. So what are we trying to see? We're trying to see the future. So can you imagine that we're going to have electric cars in the future? We believe that within 2 years, electric car prices will be less than gasoline car prices, and I would be very worried about that disruption, especially for the oil industry and for the big car manufacturers like General Motors and Ford.
877-217-5757 for Talk Louisiana. A reminder that signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial, fine financial analyst himself, and we have Fred Dent and Andy Anderson here with us, as they have been before, surmising about what's going to happen. The president's economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, says that it's under control. The coronavirus has been contained in the U.S. Of course, many are disagreeing with him. Today we see in the front page of The Advocate, Senator Bill Cassidy is calling for more funding. The president cut funding for the Centers for Disease Control, and now we're seeing a case in which a pandemic could occur. We had John Berry on this program last week, and he noted that in 1918 through 1920, 27% of the world got the Spanish flu. A Harvard scientist, Fred Dent, says that 70% of the people on the earth will get coronavirus. If that happens, I doubt that many people are going to be caring about driving electric cars.
Well, I'm not an epidemiologist, but we can look back through history, and the Spanish flu was in an era where we had very little communication. It was just a different time, so things could not spread in terms of information as fast as they can now. But if we look back to 2003, we had the SARS virus, and over a period of 38 days, the market fell 13% on that. As a matter of fact, Jim, you might remember this. I still have in my drawer a Buddy Romer insulation suit and mask that I bought that Buddy was selling during that time to help us protect from the SARS virus. That eventually ended. In 2015, we had the Zika virus. The market fell by 13%. So again, who knows where this is going to go? I don't think it's going to be cataclysmic. This too is passing.
Well, you know, the other complicated factor is that it may not even be this. It might be something else. You know, there could be a black swan event out there that we just don't know about. So, you know, when the media focuses on something such as this virus, which is probably what it is, but it's not always the case. It might be something completely different. We timed the market, and our timing indicators went bad on us last week. That's when we started to move to cash. Now, you know, these economists like Larry Kudlow can say whatever they want to say, but the market did not react well this week, and I would be very concerned and very defensive right now.
877-217-5757. You're a 70% cash. Fred, where are you right now?
Well, we don't time the market. I was telling somebody the other day that when I was a kid, my parents took me on a cruise, and one of the first things that we did was a lifeboat drill. We hated it, but it was something that had to be done in advance. And in investing, what we do with lifeboat drills is we balance, we diversify, and then we rebalance. And so we have a discipline that precedes any of these kinds of things to ride out the storm.
You know, we were talking about 29. You know, in 29, a buy and hold approach, you lost 90% of your money. You know, there was a story told one time about a money manager named Gerald Loeb. A woman came into his office in 1928, and he recommended a stock called Columbia Pictures to her, which at that time was something like a Netflix. And the son came into his office the next day and berated him and said that she needed to be in New York Central, which was a railroad paying a dividend. It was trading at $260 a share. By 1932, New York Central was bankrupt, and Columbia Pictures was booming. So it's basically just understanding what the future is going to be.
Listener, and we'll go to the phone lines in a moment, but talk@talklouisiana.org. Connie asks about, this is Connie in Oak Hills, asking about how this will affect potentially the presidential election. Now, less than 35 weeks away, the president, of course, has benefited from a strong market. Just as President Obama did when he ran for re-election. If the market tumbles, does that mean curtains for Donald John Trump, Fred Dent?
I don't think it's going to help. I mean, it's broader than the market. It's an economic question.
It in this case, obviously, Trump doesn't have anything to do with the coronavirus, but if the market goes up, you get plaudits, and if it goes down, you get blame. Andy?
Well, if we go into a recession and this goes into a bear market, which is completely possible, nobody's going to win in that situation. Nobody makes money in a bear market.
And politicians often are the beneficiaries when things go well, and they are the targets when things are not going well. 877-217-5757. Phil in Jefferson Terrace, you're on with Fred and Andy. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Jim. Yes, I'm observing that I know that the internal combustion engine is going to be basically it's obsolete now. Volvo's not going to build any more of those, and I know China's building a lot of electric vehicles. My question is, in terms of what that means for us, you know, for Louisiana and for oil and gas.
Oh, I think it's very serious. Very serious. Exxon broke to a new 52-week low yesterday. Oil broke below $50 a barrel yesterday. It's in a serious downtrend. We're going to have a glut of oil within 2 years as the electric cars are adopted. We will have about 37 million electric cars on the road within about 5 years.
Tom in Woodland Ridge says, please ask your guests, Fred and Andy, whether this big drop, which scares the heck out of the casual investor or someone relying on their 401k, isn't just an engineered dip designed to let institutional and savvy investors make another bag full of money by pushing the market down and then just buying at the low.
Oh, that's a bunch of hogwash.
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard for any one entity to really control the market. Mm-hmm. Indeed, in the short term, things can be pushed around, but for the investor, and this gentleman characterizes himself as a casual investor. I'm not certain what that is. I guess
you're very serious about your investment.
Yeah,
very personal. Absolutely. And it's personal. Nothing's more personal to people than their money. I found that money drives people far crazier.
You know, that's
than
why I don't do mutual funds else. Because I feel like when I do a mutual fund, I lose control over my assets. I want to know exactly what I've got every single minute of the day.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on Talk Louisiana.
You know, in the last 2 days, Monday and Tuesday, the stock market, the Dow Jones lost 1,900 points. I think that's the biggest two-day loss in history. And corporations have spent a lot of money buying shares back, and the value of those shares has dropped tremendously. And if this virus gets out of control in this country, we're going to be in for a severe recession while the Republican president and Republican Congress is running up the debt. You know, that tax cut, you could have taken the money to the Mississippi River Bridge, tore it up, and throw it in the river, because it might not come back in stock value for years. So that shows you how irresponsible the Republican president and the Republican Congress are, cutting taxes in a good economy only to go into a recession. And you don't want to be in a recession owing a lot of debt. It's the worst of both worlds.
All right, David, we're about to go to a break, but another listener notes that this coronavirus, obviously if it affects people, it could affect politicians, and it's been hitting the very old. And think about it. Michael Bloomberg, 78. Bernie Sanders is almost 79. Donald Trump's almost 74. Joe Biden's almost 78. What could happen to them? Is it possible that candidates for president could contract coronavirus? We'll talk about this and more when we return. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Happy Ash Wednesday. And Alondra Villarreal is producing. Our guests are Fred Dent of, it's Dent Wealth Assets now.
No, Dent Wealth Advisors.
Dent Wealth Advisors, DWA, Dent Wealth Advisors. And B.F. Anderson
like
and
Associates. Like E.F. Hutton. You know,
yeah,
B.F. Anderson
Hutton.
Talks.
Yeah, what happened to E.F. Hutton?
Fantastic story. A guy named Gerald Loeb started the firm. They got bought out by, I want to say, Smith Barney, but it was a fantastic firm in it today.
B.F. Anderson Advisors, the man who heads it, is Andy Anderson. His partner is his daughter, very talented Amy, who's in studio. And Fred Dent came solo representing Dent Wealth Advisors, formerly Dent Asset Management, but now
correct.
Dent Wealth Advisors. And generally, people in your line of work do well, and the market over time is a better bet. I agree with Andy full-throated endorsement for what he says about over time the market is good, but sometimes it can bite you, especially if you get in and out at the wrong time. And the earlier remark about these dips, people make a lot of money on the dips if they time it right, don't they?
Yeah, but that's more of a trading strategy. Look, I've been building my portfolio since 1976. Every year I add money to it. I just added money to my portfolio this year. It's a long-term process. And look, thank the Lord I did it, because I've now got a nice portfolio that hopefully when I'm 90 years old, I'm going to be very glad that I have it, versus a bunch of rent houses that I got to maintain or other investments that aren't working out. I really think
real estate's a good investment, too, though.
Well, sure it is. But I'm just saying that you should build your portfolio over time. You know, a lot of people just don't understand that long-term concept, which is you just go with a strategy and you stick with it.
But if everybody had your strategy, they wouldn't be building things. They would just be investing. You got to have some people out there actually building things and doing things and being involved in other things like real estate to make the economy perk, right?
Yeah, but you're talking about people that run businesses. I'm talking about investment portfolios.
Okay.
You know, if you run a business, you probably have a retirement plan. You'd probably need to get it invested. Don't put it in bonds.
All right. Here's another question. You said you were, this is from Tracy at Capital asking, you said you were at 70% cash now. Where were you last week?
We were about, gosh, we were really around 25% cash, and we started selling around Thursday of last week. And the reason why is that we use a trend-following strategy, and the canary in the coal mine was the small-cap stocks, which is the Russell 2000 Index, is just underperforming, and we saw it breaking down first. And so on Thursday, we started to move out of the market. Then Monday, we got very aggressive. And then we had two more positions we let go of yesterday. So as of yesterday, we're at 70%.
Well, another listener notes that even though the market in the early going today is doing well, Tesla's down 12 points, probably in response to the revelation that a person died while watching video games in their Tesla. You got to be careful with these electric cars, Andy.
Actually, the story is Panasonic is backing out of a solar deal up in New York. That's the news that's driving it today.
All right, but it's still way higher than it used to be. And at one time, Andy Apple Anderson was driving a Tesla.
Yeah, you know, we found Tesla right after it went its initial public offering in 2011. We bought the stock initially at 27. Then it ran up to close to 400. We got out of it in 13, I want to say around 350-ish. Then the stock just basically went dead and didn't do anything, dropped all the way down to 178, and we just kind of kept an eye on it. And then last year in the third quarter, they came up with a fantastic earnings report. But the real news here, and if people are interested in this, do a Google search on a company called Maxwell Technologies. Tesla bought Maxwell last year. It's a major deal. They have come up with a new battery technology that could really be a game changer.
Did I hear you say you had three stocks?
Yeah.
Three.
I have
three stocks.
I have three stocks.
Well,
right now.
Fred, I suspect you have hundreds of stocks.
Correct.
And some people would say Andy is a riverboat gambler doing this because
I've never lost money.
You've never
never lost money.
You've never lost money.
My portfolio is bigger today.
You didn't lose money in 2008?
I'm going to tell you, my portfolio went down, but never below what I put in.
Well, then you lost money then.
I lost profit.
Okay, well, some would say that's losing money, but everybody loses money in the market.
We were talking about E.F. Hutton. Gerald Loeb, who founded E.F. Hutton, his philosophy was put all your eggs in one basket and watch that basket.
But Fred, if you got 100 stocks, you're more likely to not be hit as hard when there's a calamity and maybe not benefit as much if you've got one hot stock like Tesla. How does that work as far as you having your strategy and Andy having his? I don't think you're ever above like seven stocks, are you?
No, I'll go to 10. I'll go to 10.
You'll really stretch it out with 10, but you have hundreds.
I mean, this is we what have Warren hundreds Buffett did.
We have hundreds of stocks. We have stocks from all around the globe, properly diversified. We have some bonds for our clients. And so, yes, it does smooth the ride because we are balanced and diversified. We may have a year in which we don't do as well as Andy, but maybe in the down years we don't do as poorly.
We go to cash. I mean, if things get bad, we go to cash. We'll go to 100% cash without blinking an eye. Look, there's a book out called The Buffett Way. It's about Warren Buffett in his early years. Now, he was a focused investor, which meant he bought 10 to 15 stocks. Now, he hit the ball out of the park with Coca-Cola in 1988, okay? So he says in the book, he says, look, if you're not a focused investor, you might as well just do index funds, you know?
But, Andy, if I may just challenge you a little bit on that, Warren Buffett is a focused investor, and certainly he has done well, but I've never heard about him timing the market.
No, I'm not saying that everybody does time the market. We trend follow, which is a form of timing, which is if we see – we look at the market this way. Mm-hmm. We look for a break in the trend, which we have right now. That's the reason we're at 70% cash.
Are you saying down 8% is a break in the trend?
It's a break in the trend, not a violation. It's not a bear market. This is a correction, but there'll probably be some rotation in here where there'll be new leadership that'll pop up, and I want to have the cash available to move into the new leadership.
All right. Sharon says what you're doing, Andy, is a glorified form of day trading. You're in and out of stocks, and there may be some validity to that, but she says, I think it's a lady, perhaps this is a strategy others should use, just stay at home and watch how things are going and move in and out based on your gut?
I've been doing this for 45 years, and I started this strategy in 95, and I've never looked back. And I'm just saying that, yes, I know about buy and hold, but I believe that buy and hold is a myth. I think buying stocks for a dividend is a bad idea. Look at
but
Exxon.
The thing is, you know, some people, as we know, when the market dropped to what, 6,500 or so, in the early days of Obama's presidency, after it had cratered during Bush, they got out then, and they should have stayed in. At some point, it's advisable to stay in, even when things are going down, because ultimately they will go up. Fred?
I can remember 6,500 on the Dow. It was a very, very tough time, especially keeping all of our clients on board with the process and the plan that we had put in advance. And I'm happy to say not one client made a change, and they participated when the market came back, and they're doing very, very well. And as we know from a call that we had some months ago from another caller, they went to cash. And if you went to cash at that time, it was a fatal mistake because most people did not get back into the market, or maybe they're getting in now that is up over 10 years.
And it had dropped from where to where? We know it went down to 65, but I believe it was over 10,000, wasn't it? It was.
What I remember is the percentage drop, which is around 50%.
50%, so it's about 13,000 then, and then it went to 6,500.
I just don't want to go through that. You know, I'm going to get out.
Well, we all have to go through it when it
Well,
happens.
I'm going to get out and go to cash, and then I'll get back in. I'll get back. My indicators have worked incredibly well
but
for me.
But if you time it wrong, then the market's gone up before you're back in.
Well, who says we do wrong?
Well, I suspect you're not 100% accurate on this. Nobody's 100%.
I don't think I've ever missed a bull market.
No, over time.
Yeah.
But sometimes, like with Tesla, in retrospect, it would have been better just to hold, wouldn't it?
I don't think so.
Why not?
Because it went dead for 5 years. I was in there making...
It wasn't 5 years.
It went dead in 13 and didn't start moving again until last year.
It was moving. It wasn't moving like it has
it
the last
It was moving
few
sideways.
I mean, but this time it has really exploded, of course.
Right. It was moving sideways.
Okay.
Look, they got a breakthrough in battery technology. I'm telling you, pay attention to that. The month of April is the month they come out with this technology, and it's going to be a game changer.
All right. Hold tight. We're really going to have another segment with Fred and Andy. Fred Dent of Dent Wealth Advisors and Andy Anderson of BF Anderson & Company. And your number is 877-217-5757. And we'll pause for the news. After this brief pause, we return with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Another segment with Fred Dent and Andy Anderson, two seasoned financial advisors. Collectively, I think they have about 70 years of experience, and they're in studio. If you'd like to join the conversation, we welcome you at 877-217-5757. A listener responding to what you had said earlier, Fred, you said you were investing in global markets. What countries are you?
All around the globe. We're interested in unlike Andy, we don't do individual stocks. We invest in very high quality mutual funds and exchange traded funds and index funds as well. And they're all around the globe. The businesses that are solving human needs, wants, and desires.
Well, the death toll for the coronavirus, 2,762. More than 50 of those deaths are outside of China, where the virus was identified late last year. So we'll see how this goes, but the market is not responding well. In the early going, though, today, it is doing better. But we've seen that happen before, and it can turn on a dime. 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Another listener, Andy, asks about Bernie Sanders, who could very well be the next president of the United States. He's an avowed socialist. How would the market respond?
I don't think it would respond well. You know, Franklin Roosevelt came in 32 after the Great Depression, and he was pretty much considered a socialist. You know what? But everything worked out. You know, the New Deal
was a
good thing, and it worked out just fine. You know?
And Roosevelt, in his 12 years in office, saw the market go up 199%, a record only eclipsed by one man, the great Bill Clinton, 229%, the guy who gave us the highest stock market, balanced the budget, and there were no wars of significance, at least no casualties involving U.S. soldiers in Bosnia, where there was a war. He did a job that he's gotten very little credit for. But the market went very well under Clinton. The budget was balanced. We've got the market doing relatively well under President Trump, but we have a $1 trillion deficit. When does that come back to bite the country and the world, Fred Dent?
It will somewhere along the way, and somehow we'll get through it. It's not going to be cataclysmic. It's just something that has to be dealt with. And as long as politicians keep putting it out into the future, it just becomes delayed and it only begins to aggregate in terms of the severity that it will eventually come. But somehow we're going to get through that too. just like the coronavirus.
You know, I've been studying the 1920s here recently, and I think the most important thing to realize about socialistic activities, meaning where the federal government comes in and helps the citizens of this country, the Depression hit in 29, the stock market lost 90% of its value, and Roosevelt had to actually close the banks for a month. So think about it. You wake up in the morning, mm-hmm. and the only money you've got for the next month is the money in your pocket, you know? So he had to get very aggressive and do socialistic programs in order to get consumption going and get the economy going, because he was a capitalist and he did believe in capitalism, but he had to use socialism to revive it. We need to we're not in that position now.
Under Reagan and under the two Bushes and under Trump is socialism for the rich, with these tax cuts benefiting people with means.
I'm simply saying that if we get in a bind, we're going to have a problem. And I think Dave in Atlanta would agree with me.
Well, you've in the past said deficits really don't bother you that much, though.
I've never said that.
I thought you said it.
Jim, can I say something about this idea of socialist and capitalist and liberal and conservative? We live in a complex world now. To make everything black and white and binary in terms of only one choice in the world is really simplistic. And we're in a complicated world where there are a lot of factors. And to label someone either way, and I'm not defending anybody or any politician necessarily, I'm just saying things seem to work out over time regardless of what we call it, and we're going to be okay.
I wanted to clarify something real quick, if you don't mind, Jim. You know, we were talking about never losing money and all that. I want to make sure you understand what I mean. We have a model portfolio that we started in June of 1995 with $2 million. It's a hypothetical portfolio, okay, but we use it as a guide for all of our clients. That portfolio is now at $26 million. So we started with $2 million, it's at $26 million. But along the way, like in 2000 or 08, 09, it did drop to like $15 million, $14 million along those lines. But it's now at $26 million, and we started with $2 million. That's what I was trying to say.
Okay. But some people would say you could just put your money in a money market account and have the same results because the market has gone up on the whole. But you're picking and choosing stocks, and you have wild volatility because you only have a few stocks.
Yeah. I mean, we do have volatility.
But you've had great years, and I've acknowledged that. In fact, 1 year was the best in the country for any advisor.
I wouldn't be surprised if this quarter we're not ranked pretty high this year, this quarter.
I suspect a few people have Tesla, though.
Well, we're up 20% so far.
I think you're
going
to get the car back.
I've got one in order. I'm ordering a Model Y.
All right.
I wanted to wait for
the autonomous. Here's another question, which has also come up when Andy and Fred have been on, from Brent, asking about whether people should weigh dividends when investing in a stock, Fred.
Yeah. I mean, dividends matter. I think the S&P 500 index is yielding somewhere between 2 and 3%. That's better than you're going to get on a 10-year treasury.
You see, this is a real troubling issue for me. This is a big one. Look, dividend comes from the word divided, okay? You own a company. When you get a dividend, you are an equity owner of the company. You're not getting interest like on a bond or a CD. You're getting a shared amount of the profits of the corporation. Now, what that does is it reduces the cash on the balance sheet for the corporation. Look at Exxon. Exxon is currently paying a 6% dividend, and they're having to use 102% of their earnings to pay the dividend. If they have to cut that dividend, that stock's going to plummet.
But the investors benefit from the dividends, don't they?
Well, wouldn't it be better off for the company to retain the earnings, build the balance sheet, and then you just sell off a few shares every so often as you need income?
Well,
makes a heck of a lot more sense than the company being in a predicament where they have to pay that dividend, like General Electric. They had to pay the dividend. Once they cut that dividend, that stock plummeted. You know,
so you're a no dividend guy, and Fred is he's a dividend fellow.
It doesn't make sense.
Okay, but Andy's passionate, and we like passion, and he's got a good track record.
No, it just doesn't make sense.
John in New Roads says of you, Andy, he says BF is not the initials for bullfighter. Let's tone down the machismo.
I'm sitting here silently just watching Andy almost say hallelujah a moment ago.
But this coronavirus is something beyond our control. I think Larry Kudlow, he probably aired yesterday. Those remarks will come back to bite him and the president in a big way, with him saying it's been contained.
Well, yeah.
He said, in fact, he even used the words airtight.
Yeah, and that's the risk by making political statements driven by political impulse to assuage the public that if he's wrong, that's not going to be helpful for them.
But you noted other viruses that have not been as bad as some feared. So there is a track record of the world getting through these sorts of things. But you can only imagine what will happen if it spreads in a big way to the United States.
Yes, and I'll also add that the solutions through vaccines and other – as a matter of fact, there's an old anti-malaria drug called chloroquinine that was developed in 1934. It's cheap. They think it's going to be effective against the virus, and it's being tested in China right now, plus other vaccines and treatments that are coming that are happening much faster.
Yeah, Gilead's got one. It's the one they use for HIV.
But would you be afraid of flying, for example?
Yeah.
You would? Well, that imagine how that would affect the economy.
Yeah, sure.
Would you be afraid of going to an LSU football game?
Maybe.
No. Yeah.
My son is getting ready to go to Portugal, and I told him to get trip insurance because I think he's going to have to cancel his trip.
Well, I think this is a message that all of us should be in shape. We should have everything in our arsenal to fight this virus if it comes our way, right?
Including the Buddy Roemer hazmat suit with the mask from the SARS or Zika or whatever it was.
Well, Buddy Roemer, of course, was a man who thought outside the box. And sometimes that kind of thinking is appropriate. And in this case, we just don't know. But I'm afraid of mass panic. By the way, the Dow, listener notes, is going now up over 400 points today. It's lost, 1,900 points the last 2 days. If it stays this way, then for now it's stabilized until the next big story. Where would it be without this? Would it be, it's at 27,500 now. Would it be at 30,000 or more?
Who knows? I mean, this may be just the one thing that the market was looking for to pull back because we've really had a nice run. And it could be, if not the coronavirus, maybe it's just some other thing, as Andy alluded to earlier, some other event that occurs that pulls the market down.
But to put it in perspective, that 6,500 was in 2009, right?
Correct. 2007, 2008, 2009 was the bottom.
2009 was the bottom. Even with this drop, it's at 27.5. So it's gone up 21,000 points in 11 years. So that's pretty good.
Yes.
That means an average stock has gone up fourfold. An average stock, in fact, a little more than that. So if you invested $100,000 in 2009, on the average, you would have $400,000 or more now.
That took a lot of chutzpah to do that, because if you remember, that was a time where I couldn't find one person who was saying, I mean, we said it every day as the market was falling. Great time to buy, great time to buy. And man, it just kept falling and falling, falling. And by the time it bottomed out, everybody was completely wrung out.
But ultimately, some people were buying or it wouldn't have gone back up.
That's correct. All of a sudden, it turned.
It turned. So,
well, we use a trend following technique called the TIDES, which is five indexes that we follow using 25-day and 50-day moving averages. And it's without getting into all that. The beauty of the TIDES is that once they go out, TIDES go in, TIDES go out. Once they go out, you move to cash, you stop all buying, and you let this thing get back to where the TIDES come back in again, which might be years. You don't know.
All right. Sophie asks, are tech stocks still good investments?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah,
I
mean, but Apple, by the way, even with the drop and certainly affected by what's happening in China, $1.3 trillion is the market value for Apple, and Microsoft is $1.31 trillion. It is now the most valuable company in the world.
Well,
Microsoft, Bill Gates, go Sunu. Bill Gates.
I think the most important number one can look at is market capitalization. And we have a rule at our firm, which is we're not going to look at anything that we don't think we can double our money in. Anything we fool with, it's got to be a potential double within a reasonable amount of time, okay. 3 to 5 years.
And the other $1 trillion stock, as far as market value, is Amazon.
So how many companies do you know currently are $2.8 trillion?
I don't know.
There's none, zero. So, it's kind of difficult for me to buy a $1.4 trillion company.
All right. Thank you, Andy Anderson. Thank you, Fred Dent. Okay. Let's do it again soon, and we'll be back after this time out with more Talk Louisiana.
Thanks, Jim.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Alondra Villarreal is producing, and your number, 877-217-5757. Lines are open. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email address. Democrats unleashed a roaring assault against Bernie Sanders' electability and seized on Michael Bloomberg's past with women in the workplace. It was a raucous debate Tuesday night in Charleston, South Carolina, testing the strength of the two candidates leading the party's presidential nomination fight. Sanders, with his status as the front runner, faced the brunt of the attacks for much of the night, and we're talking about two guys who were 78 years old who were the targets for the most part. Pete Buttigieg, who is all of 37, mired among the moderate fighting to emerge as the chief Sanders alternative, seized on the senator from Vermont's self-described democratic socialism and his recent comments expressing admiration for Fidel Castro. He says, Buttigieg, former mayor of South Bend, "I'm not looking forward to a scenario where it comes down to Donald Trump with his nostalgia for the social order of the 1950s and Bernie Sanders with a nostalgia for the revolutionary politics of the 1960s. So Bernie Sanders is the favorite to win the nomination now. He's right now trailing Joe Biden in South Carolina. It's the last stand for former Vice President Biden. If he does not win in the Palmetto State, it's curtains for Joe Biden, who was the front runner not so long ago. But Bernie Sanders, who finished second to Hillary Rodham Clinton in 2016, is now in position to perhaps be the Democratic nominee as an avowed socialist. The betting odds for him have gone down a bit in recent days, but they're still above 50%. In Las Vegas, Sanders is regarded as a 53.2% possibility of becoming the Democratic nominee. Mike Bloomberg's at 25%, Joe Biden 12%, Pete Buttigieg 9%, and Hillary Clinton is at 3.3%. Obviously, she would be the possible candidate in a brokered convention. But we will see what happens in South Carolina and on Super Tuesday. And Bernie Sanders, of course, will have made his mark in a big way by the time Louisiana has its primary on April 4th. By then, it may all be decided, or it could be a horse race. And if that's the case, we may see a lot of the Democratic candidates in Louisiana, something we will not see, no matter who the nominee is, in the general election, because Louisiana is not in play. It's going to go to Donald John Trump, as it did in 2016. No Democrat has won this state since 1996, so forget about it. Louisiana is not going to get any action. And for those of us in the media who rely upon advertising, we like it when people advertise candidates of both stripes from the major parties. But in this case, it's not going to happen. And Bill Cassidy has an opponent in Antoine Pierce, but Mr. Pierce does not have the money to really launch a viable campaign against Senator Cassidy. And at this point, it's getting late if somebody's going to run against Cassidy, who likely will get a 6-year term almost by acclamation, even though the Senate is where the action is. If Democrats were to regain control of the Senate, even if Donald Trump were reelected, that would, of course, give the Democratic Party some capacity to box in the president, provided they also kept the U.S. House of Representatives. But with Bernie Sanders at the top of the ticket, who knows? It could be something that could be a drag on the rest of the candidates from the Democratic side across the country. And mind you, Sanders is not even a Democrat. He is an independent who caucuses with Democrats. Last Saturday, MSNBC host Chris Matthews apologized for comparing Senator Sanders' Nevada caucus victory to the Nazi invasion of France in 1940. As caucus results began rolling in, Matthews, who's the host of Hardball, criticized Bernie Sanders' early lead, claiming that Republicans would drop opposition research on the progressive candidate that would, quote, kill him if he won the 2020 Democratic nominee. He then compared the senator's inevitable win to Hitler's invasion of France. He says, Mr. Matthews did, "I was reading last night about the fall of France in the summer of 1940, and the General Reynaud calls on Churchill and says, it's over. And Churchill says, how can that be? You've got the greatest army in Europe. How can it be over? He said, it's over." And Sanders won in Nevada with 47% of the vote. As we look ahead to 2024, we're either going to have an open presidential seat with President Trump finishing his second term, or if something were to happen to the president, then Mike Pence would be the successor and quite possibly the Republican nominee. But at any rate, somebody other than Donald John Trump will be the Republican nominee in the year of 2024. And the Democrats will either have an incumbent president there behind, somebody like President Sanders or President Biden or President Bloomberg or President Buttigieg or President Warren, and they will be backing that candidate, who will likely be vulnerable, as Democrats are in presidential elections. And so we're going to have quite a horse race in 2024, and it will be wide open on the Republican side, similar to the way it was in 2016. So there's a chance for an unknown or somebody who is well-known to make a case that he or she should be the leader of the free world, and that could happen. And I've said here before that I think the scenario is that Louisiana will have another presidential candidate. In recent times, we've had Buddy Romer and Bobby Jindal, neither of whom, excuse me, got one delegate in 2024. Look for John Neely Kennedy to run for president of the United States. He's likely to be reelected to the Senate in 2022. And in 2024, look for John Kennedy, who will be 73 years old then, a young guy by today's standards as far as presidential aspirants, to seek the White House. And his stated goal in the 1969 Zachary High School yearbook, where he was class president, was to be president of the United States. And Tony Perkins, the Baton Rougean, who ran for the Senate in 2002, and got 10% of the votes, losing soundly to Mary Loretta Landrieu. Tony Perkins is now head of the Family Research Council, and he issued a press release earlier this week touting Senator Kennedy. He says, "We thank Senator Kennedy for voting to defend and advance faith, family, and freedom. As a true blue member, he voted 100% on the Family Research Council's scorecard, including to protect babies who are born alive." This is Perkins, after a failed abortion, end taxpayer funding of abortion, and confirm pro-life originalist judicial appointments. Perkins goes on to say, "Louisiana should be encouraged to know they have a champion like Senator Kennedy in Congress, who has consistently stood up for life, family, and religious liberty, helping to defeat many bad pieces of legislation while the Trump administration and many state legislatures have been advancing pro-life, pro-family, and pro-religious liberty policies." Now, Senator Kennedy has not always been, quote, pro-life on this issue, and in 2004, he supported John Forbes Kerry for president of the United States, and, of course, Senator Kerry of Massachusetts, then Senator Kerry. He was pro-choice, and Senator Kennedy worked for Buddy Romer, who vetoed two anti-abortion bills in 1990 when John Neely Kennedy was his executive counsel, a guy who told him that this would not pass constitutional muster. But Senator Kennedy is touting the fact that he's gotten this perfect score from the Family Research Research Council, formerly headed by Gary Bauer, the perhaps the most conservative movement in the country. He released a press missive afterward, after Tony Perkins made his statement, saying Family Research Council Action recently released its annual scorecard, True Blue Award winners for the first session of the 116th Congress. U.S. Senator John Kennedy scored a perfect 100% for votes cast last year. He was awarded the FRC Action's True Blue Award for displaying unwavering commitment and support of faith, family, and freedom. And these are some of the bills, there are 14 of them, that the senator voted the way the Family Research Council wanted him to. So-called Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act, Violence Against Women Act, the Conscience Protection Rule, the Protect Life Rule, the Mexico City Policy, the Repeal of the Transgender Military Policy, Repeal of the Fetal Tissue Research Policy, Providing Banking Access to the Marijuana Industry, the Trump Administration's Transgender Housing Policy, Gender Neutral Standards and Planning in the Military, Recognition of Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity as Civil Rights Categories, Restrictions on Taxpayer Funding for Abortion in D.C., Confirmation of Sarah Pitlick to the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Missouri. Now, some of these obviously are bills in which the Family Research Council wanted Senator Kennedy to vote no on, and that he did. He stood with them 100% of the time, and he is the most quotable senator in the chamber of the 100 chosen ones, and John Neely Kennedy is perhaps as well known as almost any senator in the country. And unlike Mitt Romney, he has not strayed from the president. He has stayed with the president, voting to acquit him on the articles of impeachment and voting not to have witnesses appear before the United States Senate, voting over and over for Trump judicial nominees. He has been true to the president. And if John Kennedy is indeed the nominee in 2024, look for Donald Trump, whether he's a private citizen or whether he's President Trump leaving office, to be in Louisiana and across the country supporting the guy who supported him, John Kennedy. As Roy Fletcher, who worked for John Kennedy when he was a liberal, said, Senator Kennedy has learned how to read a poll, and in Louisiana, the president is very popular, and among Republicans, the president is very popular, and John Kennedy was a Democrat when he ran against David Vitter in 2004, but he has since had a transformation, an epiphany, if you will, and he is a solid, true red Republican. That's it for today. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.